following podcast is a presentation of Sunridge Community Church.
We turn to a series that we're in, and we've called Improv, and it's a study in the book of Proverbs. And today, it is Mother's Day. And quite typically on a Mother's Day, we would have a message that would be themed around moms. Today, it's going to be a little bit different. We want to talk about family, and we want to talk about family, actually, in a bit of a different way as well. And so I just want to give everybody kind of a game plan as to what it is that we're going to try and do, and we'll see, you know, how we did. And ultimately, what we really desire is that God touches your hearts, every one of you. So here's what I'd like to suggest that we do. I want to talk to you about family, and the way I would like to do that is to talk about marriages and parenting. And those are kind of two pieces that I want to, you know, in some way teach this morning. And then I want to have that followed by a story by a very good friend of mine named Mark Passai, and he'll come and share his story, followed by a baby dedication of Lane Zimmer. And so that's kind of where we're going, and then we're going to have a time where we just sing and worship together. And so my heart's quite full, and I think it's quite full because I'm anticipating that God is going to do something quite powerful this morning. So I'm pretty jazzed. I want to pray, and then I want to launch, and then we'll go, okay? Father, have your way. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay. So, don't you ever find that you just really need God to show up? And I think this morning would be one of those times. It's Mother's Day. But I want to talk about family. And you know, if you're like me, you've seen so much information on the family. Isn't that true? Books and classes and seminars. And I mean, there's a lot of talk about the family. It's really interesting to me as I look at Proverbs. The writer of Proverbs really gives us two essentials in order for us to do family well. And those two essentials are quite simply a healthy marriage and effective parenting practices. Now, this is really formulaic, and we're going to shoot holes all over this in about 15 or so minutes, I promise. But I do, at the same time, understand that there's some things within the book of Proverbs that I think we need to pay attention to and learn from. And so let's look at the first one, and it's just about marriage. Let's talk about marriage, healthy marriages, because I really think that the writer of Proverbs says this is really a key thing as you think about families. This is what it says in Proverbs chapter 5 and verse 18. It says, "Let your wife be a fountain of blessing for you. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. She is a loving doe, a graceful deer. Let her breast satisfy you always. May you always be captivated by her love." Now, some of you might have gotten distracted as I was reading this verse about deer and doe stuff. Maybe it's the breast stuff. I don't know. But the point the writer of Proverbs is saying is just quite simply this. Find joy in your relationship. Find out what it is that satisfies. Find that common interest and engage in that with your spouse. You just find joy and fulfillment in that. Why? Because marriage is the foundation of a healthy family, so that families can be built upon this. And this is the only kind of marriage that the writer of Proverbs really talks about. And it's these things where it's when you get married, you decide when to get married, then stay married. Work on what needs to be worked on. You know, call out for help when you need to call out for help in areas of your marriage. But when you get married, stay married. Work, pray, fast, whatever you need to do. But work on your marriage. Stay committed to your marriage. That's where healthy families will flow from. Now listen. There's also this ever-present temptation that seems to rip the heart out of marriage, and it's this issue of committing adultery, to which the writer of Proverbs has an awful lot to say. And I want to talk a little bit about this because it cuts the heart out of marriages. And as you can imagine, it cuts the heart out of families. Proverbs 6, verse 32 says, "But the man who commits adultery is an utter fool. For he destroys his own soul. Wounds and constant disgrace are his lot. His shame will never be erased." I mean, this is about as straightforward a passage of scripture as anything you'll find in all of the Bible. It's just saying, just don't do it. Take the adultery option off the table. Don't even consider it. Make it out of the question. He just says, adultery is such a destructive activity that the person that engages in it is a fool. And those are painful words. But it's one of those things that destroys not only himself, but it destroys his spouse. And not only just himself and his spouse, but his family. And quite often, it's the other family that gets destroyed too. And we all know stories where this is true. It's a loser all the way, the writer says. Don't even think about it. So Proverbs even warns about the dangers, and we're talking about healthy marriages still. But the writer of Proverbs even goes further and he says, there's something I have to say about inappropriate flirtation. And here's what he says. He says, there's times where, you know, you're just bantering back between, you know, men and women, and it's fun and it's fine and it's actually can bring some joy and if it's appropriate. But what Proverbs, the writer of Proverbs is saying, there are times when we cross a line, and we all know when we do, I think, for the most part, when we cross a line, and that crossing of the line, the writer of Proverbs is saying, just don't do that, because you are in the process of moving towards something that can create a lot of damage. Listen to the warning to a young man who meets a hot-wired seductress. Proverbs 7 says this, "That is why I came out to meet you, to look for you, and I found you. I have spread my bed with elegant coverings, richly colored fabric from Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, olives, and cinnamon. Come, let's drink deeply of lovemaking until morning. Let's delight ourselves with sexual intercourse." And then she pops the big one. "For my husband's not at home. He's gone on a journey of some distance. He's taken his money with him. He will not return until the end of the month." Now she's promising this guy loving caresses all night long. What's the guy going to do? Verse 21. "She persuaded him with persuasive words. With her smooth talk, she compelled him. And now the whole story turns. Suddenly he went after her like an ox that goes to the slaughter, like a stag prancing into a trapper's snare till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird hurrying into a trap. And he does not know that it will cost him his life." Proverbs says, be very careful when the kind of banter is leading, you know, in that direction, because it'll erode and it'll break down a marriage, to which a marriage is what the foundation of the family is to be built on. Point is, Proverbs says, okay, rejoice in the wife of your youth. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. Work hard with your marriage. Love your spouse. Do whatever you need to do. But make sure that you love the wife of your youth. Now, I would imagine in a room like this, there are people that have walked through painful marriages. There are people in this room, probably even right now, you're in the middle of a painful marriage. There are people in this room, you're on the back end of walking through and seeing a marriage, you know, blow up and become so broken. And like, this is Mother's Day. and you're hearing these things, and it's kind of like bringing wounds to the surface that it's just always there. My heart goes out to each of you. I guess the point is that I just want us to be so careful that we don't ever talk about what needs to be talked about as well. This needs to be talked about. But when it does get talked about, whoa, we have to be very, very quick to say, isn't it good that there's the grace of God? Isn't it just great to know that our God that gives grace gives second chances? And that there's something redemptive in a God that sees the brokenness that oftentimes we find ourselves in. And yet these truths within this book of the Bible are there for us to learn, and I want my children to hear these things. I want teenagers to hear these things. I want young adults to hear these things so that they will understand real clearly to their toes, when I get married, I'm going to stay married. I'm going to do the work. And I'm going to stay committed to a marriage, lifelong. At the end of this message, we're going to have a story that talks about when things don't go so well here. But I want to leave it there, and let's just move a little bit into the second part that we want to talk about this morning, and that is effective parenting. Let's just say we do a reasonable job of a marriage, and after some time, there would most likely be some children that come into the scene. For Teresa and I, we were married for about 4 years, and then we had our first child. Just under 5 years, we were married, and that's kind of what it was like for her and I. And from our marriage, the strength came, hopefully, that we would raise Elish, and then Michaela, and then eventually Josh, and then Nathan. But that's the order that it looked like for our life. And Proverbs has some really interesting thing to say about now families in the context of now kids are involved. Kids have just entered the scene. Listen to this verse in Psalm verse 127, actually, not Proverbs, but this one I just love, and I wanted to put it in. Psalm 127, verse 3. It says, children are a gift from the Lord. They are a reward from Him. Expensive little gifts, but gifts nonetheless. I mean, they are a gift. Proverbs 23, verse 25 says this, and I just love this, especially on Mother's Day. This is a beautiful verse. So give your parents joy. May she who gave you birth be happy. I talked to my mom this morning and just loved her and wished her the best and all of that, and I could just tell on the phone that just a simple phone call of the expression of love, it made my mom happy. We should make our moms happy. And there's something of a truth here that I think is really important. Children are treasures from God. And I want to just say, you know, that they need to then be treated accordingly. There should be thousands and thousands of times that your children hear you lavish love on them. Like, I mean, just crazy amounts of love. Your kids, my kids, they should hear us saying, I'm crazy about you. That's a significant part for a child to know that their mom and their dad just really love them. And what's beautiful is that that should just be a natural thing within the family. What I love about Proverbs is it doesn't leave us kind of in the sentimentality of that picture. And then he just brings it home. And he says, these beautiful treasures of God, these bundles of love given by God, for sure, these little cherubs, these little beautiful packages, they have a streak in them. And this streak is a parental challenge that creates nail-biting. I mean, it is a challenge. Proverbs 22, verse 15 says, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. Listen, parenting is a challenge that is every bit as much of anything I've ever done in my life. And any of us that are parents, we would just, absolutely. Like, it's just a challenge. It's a character-building drama. No exceptions. You know, now, many of you are aware of this debate. Are children, you know, born good, and then because of their environment, they learn how to not be so good? Or are they born pint-sized little sinners? And you know, that need redeeming. Alicia, in our early years, like I had some magazines that were really special to me, and she was quite young at the time, but she took and she marked them all up, came to me and said, "Oh, Dad, you'd never believe what happened, but Michaela marked up your magazines." And I said, "Oh, no, really?" So I had a look at the magazine, and it was like Alicia last week did some art. How many here were here for, okay, my daughter, she's really quite good at art. Well, you know, that was really quite at a young age, too. So when somebody marks up something, but it looks quite beautiful, like art, like Michaela doesn't have that gift, but Alicia does. And I said, "Leash, like, are you sure? Like, are no, Dad, no way, Michaela, all the way." And she just platformed this stance for 15 or so minutes. Where did she learn how to lie? I didn't sit down and tell her how. She doesn't read. She's not going to learn. This is the three steps how. They're pint-sized sinners, I tell you. That's the way it works. That's the way children are. We found out real early that we're going to have to learn this delicate balance between doing this lavishing love and providing limits and boundaries for our kids. Listen to Proverbs 23, verse 13. "Don't fail to correct your kids. Discipline won't hurt them. They won't die." I love this line. They say they will, but they won't. They won't die if you spank them. Punishment will keep them out of sin together. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Yeah, the H word. Yeah, I mean, we don't have time to go into the discussion of spanking versus timeouts versus bedtime versus hard time, whatever. You know, like, I think that there's just some things. Parents, we need to acknowledge this. We're going to have to find ways to shape behaviors. We're going to have to find ways to shape character. And we have to lavish love on our children. At the same time, we need to provide limits and boundaries. And if we don't, this sin streak in everyone's child, if that goes unchecked, it becomes a dark force. And I mean, there may be kids that are even cared for, but they've never had limits in their life. And if they don't, it is a problem. And that's something that the writer of Proverbs just really wants us to be really aware of. Because if we neglect that, we give our kids a headache as they grow up. Because life is just hard. Which is why, parents, we have this huge challenge that we grapple with every day. Every day. Giving massive amounts of love at the same time. When do we just, you know, provide limits and reinforce those limits? And when? You know, so you find yourself saying, you know, myself, I have four kids. There's this tough balancing act where I say, you know, okay, kids will be kids. I'm going to give them a pass on that one. Versus this issue where it's like, okay, just a second. That's attitude. That's character. That one needs to be faced. And so then Dad needs to show up, you know, in a different way. I'm telling you, this isn't easy. But it's something that as parents, we really need to face. And which brings me to this point where it's just, you know, my heart just goes out to single parents. How challenging this exercise is for me. And I have a wife involved. We're talking about family. And I want to invite my friend Mark. Mark and I have been very good friends for years now, and I've walked with Mark through his story, and I always kind of knew, come on up, Mark. I always kind of knew that there would be a time where it would be right for his story to be shared, and in the context of this morning and the study that I was doing, it's awesome to have you here. He was really open to an invitation by myself to, yeah, really kind of like the first time, tell it in a way where others would hear his story. So this is a time where Mark and I are going to have a little bit of a conversation. I have some questions for him. before we talk, would you just please kindly welcome my friend Mark Pesai? Had some good time in the office back there? Mm-hmm. Feel okay?
Pretty nervous.
Great to have you here. Listen, as I was kind of thinking about, you know, the story and how we can unpack it, it seems that in large part it began back on a Sunday at your trampoline. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Mark?
Before I answer your question, I'd like to say that the point of me being up here, about telling my story, that it's about the goodness of God. I'm going to be sharing details about events in my life that are painful and tragic, but that's not the point. The point is how God brought me through these times. On June 11th, 2006, 1 hour before my son's eighth birthday party, we were going to be having about 20 kids arriving for a pool party. I just finished getting the pool and yard ready. My oldest son was on the trampoline with a friend who was in town from Calgary for the party. I was going to be going into the house to have a shower to get ready for the party, but decided to jump with them first on the trampoline a bit. Being a bit of a show-off, my usual method for getting on the trampoline was running up to it, putting my hands on it, kicking my feet up in the air, and then rolling onto the trampoline on my back. For some reason, it didn't work this way as usual. When my feet were up above my head, my hand slipped off, and I fell headfirst into the ground. At first, I just saw stars, thought I bonked my head, so I propped myself up on my elbow and was just shaking my head, trying to get the cobwebs out. But about 20 seconds later, the pain kicked in, and I knew that I'd broken my neck. So I lay flat on my back on the ground, and I called out to my wife at the time to call an ambulance. The paramedics came within about 5 minutes, and they told me I probably just sprained my neck, but took all the necessary precautions. So they put me in a neck brace, put me on a gurney, took me to the hospital. Within a couple hours of the accident, they had taken x-rays, an MRI, and a CAT scan. And then the neurosurgeon came to deliver the news. He told me that my neck was definitely broken, and with as bad as it was broken, I should have been dead, or a quadriplegic at best. He told me I was the luckiest man in the hospital. At that moment, laying in the hospital, in the worst pain of my life, some words from a 3 Days Grace song came into my head, from the song called Pain. And these words went over and over in my head for at least the next week. The words that went into my head were, "I'd rather feel pain than nothing at all." Looking back, I can see this being a pivotal point in my life where God was somehow able to get my attention like never before. And he began a transformation in my head, my soul, and my mind that's changed me as a person like I never could have imagined. When these words came into my heart, "I'd rather feel pain than nothing at all," I had this overwhelming sense of gratitude that flooded my entire being. So I lay sobbing, crying tears of gratefulness for this intense pain, because I knew that if I didn't feel this pain, then it meant I was either dead or paralyzed. I knew that if I didn't feel this pain, it meant I would never hold my children again or ever play with them again. It seemed so bizarre, but I was truly thankful to God for this pain. And I believe God used this to give me some practice for what was coming next.
I remember seeing Mark the day of the accident, and, you know, seeing him in this situation where it was just kind of crazy. And the days following, you know, when Mark talks about rejoicing in the pain, he told me these things then. It was really interesting for me and powerfully impacting on me to see this man on a hospital bed walking through this with spirits that I've yet to see. So it was really quite moving to me. How did your marriage handle this, Mark?
Well, in January 2006, six months before I broke my neck, my wife at the time had told me she wasn't happy in the marriage and that she was probably leaving me. This was a complete shock, and despite my attempts to work on the marriage, she was determined to carry out her intentions. So when I broke my neck, my marriage, outside of a miracle, was already pretty much over. For a few weeks following the accident, it appeared as if she was warming back up to me, but then even that ray of hope disappeared. And to add to the stress of our relationship already, my friend and myself had started a landscaping business earlier that same year. And while I was in the hospital, our employees, who I found out later had a major gambling problem, bankrupted our company sitting in the casino. So the added pressure of personally trying to repay corporate debt made things even worse for our marriage.
Mark, can you take just a little bit and describe how is it and why is it that your marriage broke?
Well, although my wife had been telling me since January she was leaving, her reasons and stories never seemed to add up in my head. The question I could never get an answer to was, why will you not even try to work on our marriage? Then on December 12th, 2006, 6 months and one day after I broke my neck, I found out the answer why. I found out my wife at the time was in a relationship with one of my best friends and that she was pregnant with his child. Needless to say, this was very devastating and painful on so many levels that I can't even begin to describe it. I was overwhelmed, I was confused, I was furious, I felt betrayed. I was so sad, I was so hurt. This pain made the pain of a broken neck feel like a paper cut in comparison.
So, broken neck, broken marriage, broken heart. How did you walk through that brokenness?
The next few years were by far the most difficult and painful of my life. But in so many ways, they were also the most amazing and incredible. As hard as those years were, I honestly would not trade them for anything. Within minutes of confronting my wife with the news I had just come across about her relationship with my friend, and she confirmed that it was indeed true, God made it abundantly clear to me that I needed to forgive them both. And although it would be a lengthy process, he encouraged me to begin immediately. So that same day, I began to repeat over and over to myself, I choose to forgive, I choose to forgive. God, please help me forgive. A short time after that, God again very strongly impressed on my heart that now was the time to put my money where my mouth is, and that if I really believed my theology and philosophy about life, God, and relationships, that now was the perfect time to start practicing what I've been preaching. For those of you who know me even a little bit, you know that I love to share and debate about God and love and those types of things. Some of the things that I believed God at that time was bringing to my attention were my belief that God asks us to love him, ourselves, and others unconditionally, and that we're to love recklessly and to love without expectation of love being reciprocated. Another was the gratefulness piece God had begun when I broke my neck, and how he showed me there is always something to be thankful for, even in the middle of the most painful and difficult times, and how even the pain itself can be appreciated, because if we give it to him, he can turn even that into gold. And the other was my favorite verse, know the truth, and the truth will set you free. God is truth, and I know God is truth, and if I know him, I will be free. I find myself so often looking for answers and solutions, but these aren't what he tells me will bring me freedom. So at this point, I knew I couldn't do this alone, and I decided to go all in. I began choosing repeatedly in my head and my heart to forgive and to choose to love all the parties involved. And I began forcing myself to find things to be thankful for instead of focusing on my problems and circumstances. I began focusing on finding and knowing truth and finding and knowing God. And where I began to find him was in silence. When I went to pray, I didn't even have a clue what to say. I didn't even know what to ask. I wasn't even sure what I ultimately thought was the best possible outcome, if I could even have it my way. So instead, I would sit and be still and try and quiet my heart and my mind. And although everything around me appeared to be chaos and broken, inside that quiet place, God brought me peace. He gave me his strength. He comforted me, and as the song says, he came with amazing grace. A couple months later, I was getting by, but still questioning a lot of things and trying to make sense of it all. And then one night I was laying in bed and was trying to pray, but I felt this incredible turmoil like nothing I've ever experienced. I couldn't and still can't fully explain it. I felt like I was wrestling inside, in my emotions, in my spirit, in my mind, in my feelings, and with God. When I tried to pray, it just bounced back. When I tried to be still, I just couldn't stop my heart or my mind. This went on until about 5 a.m., when God spoke so clearly to me, it might as well have been audible. He said two words, "Trust me." For a moment, the turmoil subsided. Then I started to pray, "God, I trust you with my marriage. God, I trust you with my wife. God, I trust you with," etc., etc. But instantly the turmoil flooded back. So again I wrestled until 7 a.m., just minutes before my alarm clock was going to go off, when God again was very clear. He told me, "Trust me, period. Don't trust me with your wish list. Don't trust me with how you want it to turn out. Trust me, period." So I added this to my looping mental tape, and every time I felt pain, fear, anxiety, confusion, bitterness, or other various thoughts or emotion, I would tell God, "I choose to trust you. I choose to love. I thank you for my amazing sons." And for well over a year, I'm sure I'd think these thoughts and pray these prayers and make these choices hundreds, if not thousands of times a day. God tells us to choose life. So I tried to do that every time I was tempted to allow or accept anything different. Please don't get me wrong, I didn't do this perfectly, nor did I do this 100% of the time. I had many days where I wallowed in my misery and played into the victim mentality. And I spent plenty of time where I would let my mind go and with wild thoughts that I knew weren't healthy or productive. But the amazing thing was when I chose to do things God's way, I would have this unexplainable peace and comfort to the depth of my being, and I knew it wasn't for myself. I would look at the circumstances of my life, and it made no sense that I had this peace and hope. This was such a beautiful gift for which I was extremely thankful.
We're talking about family. And one of the things about Mark that I've just so respected is he has two sons, Jace and Jaden. And Mark is a great dad. He loves his boys like crazy. And there's a lot of work in front of him because of, you know, the challenges of, you know, all of we've been talking about. So I wanted to kind of have one last question. And so I wanted to ask Mark, you know, about the parenting challenge. And so, Mark, you know, as you've walked through this story of yours, and you're just a great dad, how do you do the parenting thing? What's the challenges, and what is it that you've, I don't know, held in your heart as you lovingly raise your two boys?
Well, what I've learned from these last couple years, and how, what I'm going to read is what I've learned and how I'm applying it to that. One key thing was a couple years ago, when I was in the middle of all these trying times, my oldest son woke up one night screaming from a nightmare. So I rushed into his room and began trying to calm him down, but nothing was working. I could see terror in his eyes, and it was difficult for him to communicate what he was afraid of. After a while, I was able to decipher what was scaring him. And I said, and when I realized what was scaring him, I just said these words. I said, "Jace, I can understand why what you see would seem scary, but there's nothing to be afraid of." Instantly after I spoke these words, the terror slipped away. He relaxed and went back to sleep. I went back to my bed, and as soon as I lay my head on my pillow, God reversed roles with me, and he said to me as my father, the identical words. He said, "Mark, I can understand why what you see would seem scary, but there's nothing to be afraid of." In that moment, I remembered what I felt like when I was a young child, and my dad told me he would play ball with me later, or that he'd buy me a Slurpee after supper. I was excited. I was looking forward to it. I loved spending time with my dad, and there was no question in my mind that he would do the things that he said he would. I remember as a child thinking how amazing my dad was. I remember once he fixed our TV, and I just thought, wow, there's nothing he can't fix. I had a great dad growing up, and as his son, who I knew he loved, the thought to even remotely question his word never even crossed my mind. When I sensed God say to me, "Mark, I can understand why what you see would seem scary, but there's nothing to be afraid of," I realized the huge difference between believing in God and believing his word, and knowing God and knowing his word. Prior to these trying years, I've believed in God for over 20 years. I called him my father, and I loved him, and I knew he loved me. I went to Bible school, I've volunteered in churches, I've gone on mission trips, and I know I genuinely had an active, growing relationship with God. But if you were to have asked me, "Will you bet your life on God's promise to provide for you, to heal you, to comfort you, to strengthen you, and to bring about your best interest?" If I was completely honest, I probably would have answered, "I'll get back to you." Don't get me wrong, I did believe in God's promises. In my head, I believed them. And to some degree in my heart, I also believed them. But in my heart, there was also a belief that God will heal and provide for me if I'm good enough, if I'm obedient, and if I do what I'm told. There was also a part of my heart that God was up there using his infinite creativity for coming up with trials and tribulations he could unleash on me in order to test me. What sort of father did I believe God to be? When I sensed God said to me, "Mark, I can understand why you see would seem scary, but there's nothing to be afraid of," it was no longer about trying to believe him or wishing it to be true. In that moment, I knew him. In that moment, I fully trusted him. In that moment, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that there was nothing to be afraid of. Know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Know God, and God will set you free. In that moment, I realized I knew God like I've never known him before. In that moment, I was free. Now, after walking through some of these challenges these past few years, I don't just believe some of these things, but I know them. There's no longer any doubt in my mind that God dearly loves me and wants what's best for me. There's no question as to the goodness of God. I am confident in how he accepts me just as I am. I know he does give me his comfort and his peace. And he really will not give me more than I can handle. And he most certainly can be trusted with the care of my heart, my soul, my possessions, and my life. This is no longer just my opinion. It's something I know because it's something I've lived with his help and is now a part of who I am. I used to think of God as my father and believed he was loving and caring, but I thought of him as some untouchable stoic being on his throne way up there in heaven, coaching me through life by reminding me of his scriptures and commandments. But now I have a totally different picture of him. I have this picture of myself sitting in the middle of the worst circumstances of my life, and I'm staring at my life and situations as a massive, ominous, dark, cold, and seemingly insurmountable mountain that's right in the middle of my path. Looking at what I have to overcome, I know I'm horribly under-equipped and incapable. But without looking to my side, I know my father is sitting on the ground right beside me, looking up at the exact same mountain. He doesn't have to say a word to me. Just knowing he'll be with me every step of the way brings me peace through the journey. Through these past few years, I saw how God comforted me, strengthened me, loved me, provided for me, challenged me, encouraged me, carried me, forgave me, gave me strength to forgive, was exceedingly gracious to me, healed me, taught me who I am, taught me who he is. He opened my eyes to the beauty of life all around me, and he showed me that he truly can fix anything. How this affected my parenting is it makes me want to treat and raise my children the same way my father treats me.
I want to just pray a benediction, and then I would just encourage you to just find a way to love your mom today and find an expression that would really show your appreciation for your mom. With Teresa and I, I'm making up a little bit. Last couple Christmases ago, I got her a pressure washer for Christmas that she didn't really find that was that honoring. I'm not sure why. So today I'm taking her to the Eagles concert, and so we're leaving right now, and we're going to go to Vancouver, and we're going to check out what the boys have to do up on there. So I'm pretty excited about that. So I did pretty good this year, so she's excited about that. So find a way to show appreciation for your moms. May God bless you and keep you. May God smile on you, be gracious to you. May God show you his favor, grant you his peace. And may we as a people lovingly go and engage in our world and spread the fame and the reputation of our great God. And everybody said, amen. God bless you guys.